first presenting this afternoon is Holly Sellers, who's going to be talking about ethnobotanical classification in NISU, data collection and management.
Good afternoon. So today I'll be talking about the data collection and management aspect of my PhD project. My actual thesis title is an ethnobotanical survey of the plants of the Lisu in Northern Thailand. So this presentation will focus on the methodology used in the collection and management of a set of Lisu plant data collected from the field. And we'll cover the aims of the project overall very briefly, some background information, where and how data was collected, and then the main section, data management, we'll look at an example of the collected plant data and how that information has been organised and used since then, and project outcomes so far and conclusions. So the aims of this project, very briefly, have been to collect plant names and uses in Lisu and have them scientifically identified, to identify any kind of folk taxonomy used in Lisu, and to find any similar semantic groupings from the translated plant names. And an additional aim is to conserve the Lisu plant data, the Lisu plant knowledge that is not being passed down to younger generations in Thailand, and provide a resource to those communities as well. So for those that aren't familiar with ethnobotany, very quickly, it was first put forward as a discipline by Harshberger in 1896, and he described it as the study of the use of plants by Aboriginal peoples. Since then, ethnobotany has expanded into a large and diverse field to include not just plant use, but also how people perceive and manage plants, and exploring the relationships between plants and the traditional societies that use them. So more recently, as Cotton says on the slide, ethnobotany can be considered to encompass all studies which concern the mutual relationships between plants and traditional peoples. So there's various possible directions of study, some are shown on the slide, and include looking at folk taxonomies such as my project. So what is a taxonomy? I've given you an example of a scientific taxonomy. There are many ways of doing this, this is not the only way, but the main points here is that the largest category is plantae, the plant kingdom, and then you get smaller and smaller groupings until you get down to just one species of plant at the bottom. So, differing slightly, the folk taxonomy that was developed by Brent Berlin. So Brent Berlin investigated the linguistic categorization of biological forms in traditional and non-literate cultures in the 1970s and 80s. And in his data, he found that there were regularities in the folk categories given to plants and animals, and that this took the form of a hierarchy, as shown, that resembles the scientific one that we just saw, but with a few differences. So I've given you the English language equivalents for each level. At the top, we have, again, the plant kingdom, and I'll just draw your attention to life form. So that's, in English, that's things like what is a tree, what is a vine or a creeper, and what is a grass? And then intermediates are a bit controversial, so I won't cover those today. And then generic names are the most commonly known name that most people will know. And then specific and varietals divide up generics further. If they exist, they're a lot less common than generics. So that's folk taxonomy. Just a little bit of background on the Lisu language and people. So the Lisu live in the northern mountainous regions of Thailand, which borders Myanmar or Burma. And this area is home to several other non-Thai ethnic minority groups. The Thailand Lisu number approximately 50,000 speakers, but in total there is more than 1 million speakers across China, Myanmar and India as well. It says 0% for India, but there's actually 3,000 people. The language itself is tonal and has three main dialects, the southern, central, and northern, which is somewhat mutually intelligible. And the southern dialect is the one spoken in Thailand and is the one that I collected my data in. There are two main scripts in use. The one used in this presentation is the Fraser script, developed by missionaries in the early 20th century. And there's also a Chinese pinyin one, obviously, most in China. So some people are literate in the Fraser script and they tend to be Christian people, but many are not, even if they are Christian, and ancestor worship animist people are not usually literate at all in the Lisu script. And it's important to note that although the Lisu language itself is not currently endangered, the traditional knowledge of plant names and their uses is at substantial risk of being lost in the near future. This is partly due to the pressures of increasing modernity, Thai government policies, and younger villagers are moving away for work or study. And plant information is usually passed down orally from an older person to a younger person and is not normally written down, so it can be easily lost. So my field sites, I was based in Chiang Mai, and the very approximate location of both of my villages is shown on the map. Just show you a couple of pictures from the field sites. The first one, Doi Lan, you can see there's not much tree cover left. It's been settled for more than 80 years, so there's a lot of agriculture and not much tree cover. That's another picture from Doi Lan with hillside agriculture. The second field site, Kung Kong, has a lot more tree cover at the present time, partly because it's been more recently settled. And you can see in that one, there's agriculture sort of in the midst of the trees going on. I'm not sure if that was legal or illegal, but there you go. So equipment that I used in the collection of my data. So a camera for the plants, you need good macro, a plant press and all the things that go along with that. GPS, I used a Zoom H1 recorder. Umbrella, we used it sometimes, it was quite useful. The other thing that's vital is a notebook and pencil, which is where most of my information was written down. So my methodology, until now, there's been no extensive corpus of Lisu plant name data to work from. So to complete the project, I had to collect that verbally from the villagers over the two field trips that I did. And then the specimen samples of the plants were taken to a taxonomist, a botanist, who identified the plant's scientific names. And I collected the data just by walking around the villages and the fields and the forests with people, and people would point out a plant and tell me about it. Sometimes they had a use, sometimes there was no use, but it still had a name. And then I would take three specimen samples of each plant and press them, take them back to Chiang Mai to be identified. And then later on, I took back the dried plant samples and the pictures to the villagers for reasons I will explain. So it was to do plant sorting, and the rationale for plant sorting exercises like what's in the photos there is to investigate the cognitive basis on which people group the plants into potential categories. And these categories may or may not be like Berlin's folk taxonomic categories that I showed you earlier. So in a mostly illiterate group of people, it's easiest to do by giving them photos or dried plants, which is, you can see both options in the pictures there. I have to say the dried plants worked better for me. And asking the people to sort the plants into groups of their choosing. So you can see labels with the photographs on the right-hand side. That was my translator wrote those down, but only after the people themselves have decided what groups they wanted to use. So he wasn't directing what the grouping should be. So some of the challenges of data collection. I had really limited time in each village, partly because it's impractical to be based there with the plants that need to be taken back to Chiang Mai to be dried. There weren't really drying facilities and I couldn't really use their electricity for that. It was unreliable and would have cost them money. So I tended to collect a lot of information all at once, which meant that it was quite hard to do everything at once to get good quality notes, sound recordings, samples, and photos. I did my best. I did use helpers where I could, so sometimes someone took the sound recorder and that made life easier. Unfortunately, video was one task too many. I did get some video, but it would either use up my still camera battery too fast, even with spares, and I just didn't have enough hands for a separate video recorder. So if I did it again, I'd like to take someone with me to do that side of it. And the other issues I had was translation issues. So my translators had good English, but it was still limited, and that obviously affects the quality of information that I have, not so much the information I return to the village, because that's still in Lisu. Personally, I had very limited opportunity to learn more than just basic Lisu, and that only came in the second trip. So I had Thai, I learnt Thai before I left Melbourne originally, but I discovered quite a lot of Lisu speakers don't speak Thai or don't speak it very well, so that was interesting. Glad I had a translator. Okay, so data management. I came back with 308 separate specimens. Most of these include two duplicates as well as the originals, so that's three for each plant. These are currently being prepared to be absorbed into the LTU, which is, sorry, La Trobe University Herbarium. There's also a set left with Chiang Mai University. And the labels that I'll be using for those, the information will come from the master spreadsheet, which I'm about to show you. So my idea here is to just, we'll stick with one example. So I'll try and, I don't think this is very loud, I'll try and delay it though.
Washitza.
So, washitza.
Washitza.
So that's that plant you can see there. So we'll follow this example as we look at the same information that's been collated there, but as it appears in the master spreadsheet that I created originally. So I've just taken one row and I've split it up into this, you know, separate columns as we go across the row, just to be able to show you in more detail what I have. My actual master spreadsheet has 650 lines in total, so that corresponds to plant names. Obviously, a lot of those are duplicates. And I also have 22 columns, which correspond to data fields. I'll just be showing you the most relevant ones today. So we'll continue with the example of washitza, using this row, as I said, that's been cut up into sections. So we have, the list number is just for my reference, but the village, the collection date, and the specimen number are all very important bits of information. The specimen number relates to the actual dried plants. That's unique for each plant that I collected. And then plant use information, I don't know if people at the back can see, but this particular plant that we just saw is used for stunning or killing fish. My informants were a little undecided on which that was. Some people said the fish wake up again, and some people said they do not. So you pound the root and put it in the water, and then the fish pass out for one reason or another. And you can also use the leaves to massage into the hair as a lice treatment, and it's not eaten because they thought it's probably a poison. I don't think anyone's tested that out. Then I've also got linguistic information. So the Lisu script that I talked about before, my translator did that for me. Phonemics I did, and then the translation again came from the translator. English and Thai names I've included if I have them, if they're useful. And then at the bottom, we've got the botanical information, which was done by the botanist in Chiang Mai. GPS coordinates, I was recording as we went. And then I've got photo numbers, which relate back to the date that I collected the information. And I have them all filed away. The audio sound files are also collected under date order. They're a little bit more complicated in terms of how I filed them. But I've actually chopped up, not the original file, obviously, but took the file and made separate files for the names so I can find them quite easily mainly for transcription purposes. Besides the master spreadsheet, I also needed to make some other spreadsheets for analysis purposes. So for the first one, I was looking at folk categories. So I'll just recap the life form categories that I mentioned earlier. So in English, it's things like trees and vine and grass. And I out of those plant sorting activities that I showed you photos of earlier, these were some of the categories that came out of that exercise, and you can see our example that we've been looking at in bold. So that was actually classified as something along the lines of a vine or a creeper. The translation, the English translations are very, very rough. That I've got more specific ones, but that would take a lot of time to explain. So that's just a rough idea. And you can see other things have been classified as different categories. As well as those, people split up those piles into further categories. So I've got more spreadsheets of this kind with different categories, but again, don't have time to show you all of those today. Just to give you an idea of what that was. And then also I made a semantic sorting spreadsheet. So this is broadly based on Turpin's 2013 paper on, let's see if I can say it right, Kaitech, I think. It's an Indigenous Australian language. Obviously the languages are quite different, but I've used it as a starting point. And with my Lisu data, I've used translated meanings for each name and looked at what they refer to, either metaphors or metonymy or just any other category that seems to come up. So I'm trying to group the meanings. And the categories listed, which I'll show you a bit bigger, are just part of the process of my analysis. They're not the only options, but these are the ones that seem to come out to me. Especially animal body part metaphors. There's a lot of plant names that refer to internal animal body parts, which is quite interesting. And the other data management thing I did was getting lots of translations and transcriptions done. So these have been done both for confirming information that I collected initially, so for my analysis, but also the transcriptions in particular have been done so I can return the oral information that was collected into a written form to those Lisu communities that I worked with. So, project outcomes from all those activities and the data. So the investigation of folk botanical categories has been done, and some categories do correspond and some do not. And the semantic categorization has been done, as I just talked about. With the focus on animal body part metaphors, there was also a focus on practical uses and a plant's effect on humans or animals. And the collected information can now be collated, and at some point this year, I hope, will be made available for the communities to use. And that kind of leads into future uses. There's enough botanical information there to go forward and investigate some maybe a bit more botanically oriented questions, as well as the linguistic ones that I'm looking at the moment. Archiving, there's been lots of talks about archiving here today, so I need to work out where I can actually put this information. It's one of my jobs for this year. And then returning the information to the community. I actually re-recorded some stuff so that I can provide a succinct audio format of some kind back to the communities, because the original recordings, there's quite a lot of noise in them because we're walking around. So possible formats for that would be a book and a CD, maybe a DVD. I'm also thinking about an app. I don't know how I would do that, but some people have inspired me at this conference. And also then that sort of links into it being a resource material for the communities that I worked with and other Lisu communities as well. So conclusions. I guess I've shown a lot of data can be collected even in a relatively small scale project. Personally, I feel that a team rather than just me would be helpful to get really good quality information in all regards, and especially to add in video, which would be really great. And I have a lot of data and it can be used in many future possible ways from here. So I just like to acknowledge everyone that's helped me. I've had a lot of people helping, and my funding sources, and just references if you're interested. And thank you very much.
Thank you. I have two questions.
Yeah.
What is the biggest challenge in doing this project? Second one is for one plant, for example, Nasa Za,
mm-hmm.
How many tears, how many lines do you record?
Oh, how many lines on the spreadsheet?
Yeah. The first line you record is right, the English.
Well, the first question I'll answer first. I think, it's hard to actually pick the biggest challenge. So many. I think really just it was to do with the short amount of time I had in the villages and the pressure that put on me to get all the information at once and try to. Also, because I'm trying to get botanical information as well as linguistic information, have all of it good quality so that it can all be used, you know, in the future, maybe not just by me. I think that was sort of altogether combined to be the biggest challenge for me personally, just trying to get it all done in a short period of time. So the second question is
how many tears, how many lies do you analyze for one?
How many lines of, you mean recorded speech or just, you
research,
mean?
Research.
So I'm not sure I've understood the question, but I have 22 fields for each plant across the spreadsheet. Not all of those are filled for everyone. Also some come back into stories that I've collected as well. Some are mentioned more than once in different recordings. Plant use information can vary widely, so the one that we had had quite a lot of lines of information, but other ones will just be no use or pig food. Is that what you mean?
I could not make myself understood. I mean, when you write, record a plant,
yep.
You have a little name,
yep.
And English translation.
Yeah.
And do you have Latin names, plant names?
Do I have a word?
Latin names.
Latin names. Yes. Sorry, that was. That was.
And also, do you have cultural meaning? Analyze cultural meaning.
Okay. So
yeah.
So I've got the scientific information.
Yeah.
Is there. The literal translation gives some indication of the cultural stuff, but also anything they've told me about the plant is written in the description. But actually, those two fields kind of ended up being the same thing. But anything that I've been told about it will go into those boxes straight out of my notebook. And it varies. Yeah, that's what varies from plant to plant. So some have lots of information, some do not. Sometimes a plant was repeated later by a different person and they told me something else. I've kept them separate, but I can put them together with their names so I can collect all that information in one go just by sorting the spreadsheet for the Lisu plant name. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, with Mahita, I was kind of curious when you got the English translation there, because Tuba is, that's just Proto-Austronesian for Deris elliptica.
That's not a...
I know it may not be the same plant, but it's the Tuba is an Austronesian form.
That's just an English name. It's nothing to do with the Lisu.
I know,
yeah.
Where did you get that? I've never seen that in English before.
I would have Googled for that one, probably.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I don't know. It was a funny one. I think I did that with that one early on and then decided I wasn't going to do that again, but it's still sitting there. So.
And the other thing is you mentioned that looking for correspondences with Berlin's categories.
Yes.
Cecil Brown, of course, did his book Language and Living Things as well. He had this life form encoding sequence.
Yep.
In which he had an implicational hierarchy and then it was interpreted as an evolutionary sequence. It's all... as well.
Yep.
So did you look at that at all and see whether it's confirmed or not? Because it's disconfirmed in some languages that I know, so I'm just interested in what you found.
You mean Berlin's or Brown's?
Brown's.
Brown's. I haven't actually looked at Brown's. He's on my list of... references definitely to look at. I've sort of gone through Hun and Ellen and Berlin, but yes, I'm sort of adding more and more people. To be honest, I mean, with Berlin stuff, yeah, okay, there's generics, there's life forms, but beyond that, there's not really necessarily, it doesn't confirm Berlin stuff. So I'm not sure how I'll go with Brown, but I will definitely look into that. Thank you.
How do you deal with the plant if you don't find early find lisu name, but we cannot find the scientific name?
I actually got scientific names for all of them, that because the taxonomist I worked with in Chiang Mai was very experienced. He's actually retired, so he could just look at a plant and go, oh, that's a whatever it was. There were a couple that he wasn't sure of, and those ones I'm just, yeah, putting to one side in terms of the scientific name. But I can still analyse the lisu semantic meanings and things like that, and the life forms I can, well, life forms are harder to use without the scientific name, but yeah, I basically had scientific names for all of the 308 samples.
But from my experience, I get ethnic names, but I cannot find scientific names.
Yeah, it's only because I had that botanist in Chiang Mai that I was able to get. I mean, I wouldn't say they're 100% correct. I'm sure he would like them to be, but they're probably not 100% correct, but I've been given a scientific name for each of the plants that I collected, but if I hadn't found him, then yes, there'd be many, many that I wouldn't
have. Any botanist involved in your project?
Yeah, so James Maxwell, who's the Chiang Mai University. James Maxwell was my botanist, and without him, I would be in severe trouble. So I'm very grateful to him.
James Maxwell.
Yep.
How much like coverage do you think you got with those samples? Like, do you think you got like a third of the plants that are most salient to people or most useful to them, or do you think if you came in a different season, you would see other ones, or like, do you feel like there's more work to be done there?
Yeah, it's hard to say because there's not even a comprehensive flora of Thailand, so I have no idea. I feel like there's probably a lot more. I feel like I got probably most of the ones that most people know. I had some plant experts, but a lot of them were just farmers. They're all farmers, sorry, I shouldn't say just farmers. They're all farmers, but some were more specialised than others. And I also started getting quite a lot of repeats after maybe even the second or third time I collected. I'd say maybe a third to a half would be a rough guess. There's also situations where people have given two different scientific plants the same name, and yeah. Was there another part of that question I didn't answer? No. Okay, cool. There's someone.
I'm assuming that your objective was to test the classifications that have been proposed in the literature that these presents.
Yep.
But I wanted to hear a little bit more about the rationale for selecting the location.
Yep. There actually hasn't been. There's an ethnobotany department in Chiang Mai who has been doing stuff, but they, when I started this project, they actually hadn't published very much, so it was quite an understudied area, and my supervisor's David Bradley, so that's kind of how I fell into the Lisu language in a way. But a lot of stuff's actually been published recently by the Chiang Mai University Ethnobotany Department, and they've started doing all these hill tribes in that area. Fortunately, they still haven't done much on Lisu, which is good for me. But yeah, it's an understudied area with a lot of plant diversity, quite a lot of different ethnic groups up there, and I think a lot of scope for this kind of work at the moment. So, yeah.
Thank you.